This is Marketplace Money for the weekend of February 19th, 2010. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Marketplace Money is supported by Putnam Investments, where performance is driven by original fundamental research on a global scale. Putnam, a world of investing.
From the studios of KAZU at California State University, Monterey Bay, I'm Tess Vigeland, and this is Marketplace Money. You've been waiting for it. I know you have. And it's finally here. The bulk of the Credit Card Reform Act passed last spring takes effect on Monday. It lays down rules on everything from interest rates to fees to how far industry representatives have to stay away from college campuses. But for everyone who's thinking it is safe to whip out that plastic, hold on there, shopper. Where there's a rule, there's a loophole. We asked Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith to give us a roundup.
Some of the biggest reforms in the Card Act deal with interest rates. Card companies make about two-thirds of their money from interest rate payments. Not hard to see why. Most cards can raise your interest rate at any time for any reason to almost any amount. But the Card Act crackdown is coming. Card companies won't be able to raise your interest rate for the first year you have the card. And once they can, they have to give you 45 days notice. And that new interest rate can only be applied to new charges. Your old balance stays with your old rate. Of course, for every rule, there is a loophole. Like if you're late on a payment. Bill Hardikoff is the CEO of LowCards.com.
If you're 60 days late on your payments, your interest rate can be hiked immediately.
And that higher penalty rate applies to what you already owe, as well as new charges. Another loophole, the introductory rate. These cards come with special introductory offers, like 0% interest. The offer expires and your rate shoots up. No 45-day notice. And beware the discount rate, says Heather McGee of consumer advocacy group Demos.
Credit card companies are offering you a card at the penalty rate, but saying that they're going to give you a discount rate of a more reasonable rate until you pay late, so that the original rate is the penalty rate, the discount rate is the more reasonable rate.
Confused? Yeah, that's kind of the point. Here's how it works. Say you sign up for a card that has an interest rate of 30%, but the card company offers you a special discount rate of 15%. So you pay 15% until the card company decides the discount rate is over and bumps you to the 30% rate. That 45-day warning doesn't apply because technically they're not raising the interest rate on the card. They're just taking away your discount. Then there is the loophole of all loopholes, says Josh Frank with the Center for Responsible Lending.
If you're getting a card now, if it's a variable rate card, which 95% of them are, expect your rate will go up.
Variable rates are cards whose interest rates are tied to another interest rate, usually the prime rate. When that rate moves up or down, the card's interest rate moves with it. Again, no notice necessary. And since interest rates are so low right now, if you get a variable rate card, it's basically got nowhere to go but up. Of course, interest rates are only half the story. Fees bring in $20 billion a year for card companies. The most notorious? The over-the-limit fee. Instead of denying your card when you reach your limit, your card company approves the charge and slaps you with a fee for the privilege. Under the Card Act, your card will be denied if you try to go over your limit, unless you request overdraft protection. But the fee remains, says Josh Frank with the Center for Responsible Lending.
Instead of charging an overdraft fee, you in fact reject the charges, and then you charge them a fee for being rejected when they try to go over their credit limit.
College. It's where your credit card education begins, usually with a free T-shirt and a line of credit you can't afford. The Card Act bans card companies from campuses and outlaws those freebies. Also, students can't get a card unless they prove they can afford the payments or have an adult cosign. So you can send Junior off to college without worrying about him racking up huge credit card bills, right? Wrong, says Robert Manning, author of Credit Card Nation. He says card companies can still get to your kid by email and direct mail. As far as making students prove they can afford a card, there's a loophole for that, too.
If a credit card company offered them a $300 line of credit, a year later, what's to stop them from raising the line of credit to $1,500?
Bottom line, the Card Act does crack down on some of the industry's biggest money-making traps. but you still need to read the terms and conditions. That's the encyclopedia that now accompanies your card. And you should probably read your statements really carefully. Oh, and did I mention that if you want them on paper, there's a fee for that. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace Money.
And Stacey is here in the studio with me, and I wanted to ask you a couple of follow-up questions. I know you've been following the credit card industry for at least the last couple of years now. How effective is this new legislation going to be?
There are a lot of loopholes, but they're still going to have a pretty big impact. Estimates say that they're going to cost credit card companies anywhere from $20 to $50 billion.
That's a pretty big chunk of change. I assume, this being a business, that they're going to find ways to make up for that money.
Couple ways, yeah. The first big one is something we've already been seeing, and that is interest rates. They have already started hiking up our interest rates. In fact, the Pew Charitable Trust found that card companies raised interest rates 20% in the first half of 2009. Card companies make most of their money from interest rates, about two-thirds of it, so they are doing everything they can to hold on to that revenue stream. The other big moneymaker is fees.
And more fees, and more fees, and more fees.
Basically, the card companies are taking a page from the airline industry book of nickel and diming.
Charging you for blankets. Is that what the credit card companies are doing?
Basically, you're going to get charged a fee, a dormancy fee if you don't use your card, a low usage fee if you don't use your card enough, a fee for using your card overseas, a lot more annual fees for just having a card.
And there's nothing in the law that prohibits all these new fees.
There are some fee laws, but they are very relaxed, and they just say that they can't add up to more than 25% of a card's credit limit.
Huh.
But that's a lot. And so really, the laws on fees are very relaxed.
Are all those really going to make up for this $20, $50 billion loss of revenue?
No, especially since it's not just regulation that card companies are dealing with. They're dealing with a new economy, too. We are charging less. We have fewer cards. And the best customers, the credit card company's best customers, or people who used to be their best customers, have no money. And they are trying to figure out how to make money from customers that they used to ignore.
Those would be the what were formerly known as deadbeats, the people who actually pay off their balance every month?
Yes. They have to figure out how to make money off of the deadbeats. They're doing a couple of things. The first is something called interchange fees. Now, that's a fee that a merchant will pay the card company every time you use your card.
So I go to Target. I use my credit card. Target is paying money to Visa, MasterCard to allow me to do that.
Yes, exactly. Those little fees added up to $50 billion last year.
And presumably, we all eventually pay that because that means merchants are just going to raise their prices to cover those fees, right?
Absolutely. And then card companies, in order to make you use your card more to collect more interchange fees, have another tactic to make money in the new economy, and that is rewards cards.
Right. So does that mean we're going to see changes in rewards cards or just more of them?
A lot more of them, really. A lot of cashback cards, a lot of cards that are tied in with merchants. So they'll give you access to special sales, a lot of cards tied into free gifts, things like vacations, airline tickets, hotel stays, and things like that. Those cards are also attractive to the companies because they charge you a fee for the card every year.
Right. In fact, I got a debit card recently that was a rewards card, and turns out I have to pay $50 a year for it.
Yeah. They're going to try cashing in on debit cards, too, because more and more Americans are using their debit cards. So a lot of debit rewards cards or debit credit hybrid cards, too.
Oh, big brother. Wow.
I know.
Well, I suppose, as we've heard, this is a start, but obviously lots and lots of ways for the credit card companies to continue to ding us as consumers. But that's the price we pay for the privilege of credit, I suppose.
Indeed it is, with interest.
With interest. Stacey, thanks so much for your reporting.
Thanks, Tess.
Marketplace Money is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term goals at Vanguard.com. And by Constant Contact, helping small businesses stay connected to their customers with email marketing, online surveys, and event marketing. Over 300,000 small businesses and nonprofits use ConstantContact.com.
This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. So I guess the lesson in all this is that we can't stop analyzing our credit card bills. Be on the lookout for all those new fees and charges, or maybe, just maybe, it's time to put the plastic away. Marketplace Economics Editor Chris Farrell says that would be the best medicine for the card companies.
Call it the credit card company lament. Thanks to new government regulations, the credit card business is less profitable. The new rules are forcing us to raise interest rates, hike fees, and cut lines of credit. Taken all together, they whine, consumers will have less access to credit than before. Sounds good to me. My hope is that more people will say no thanks to borrowing on their credit cards. Fact is, the credit card company business model depends on treating us like suckers. This came home for me rereading a book recently about the rise of consumer debt by business columnist Joseph Nocera. In the early 1980s, a pioneering credit card executive bluntly summed up for Nocera the ugly truth of the credit card business. Profits come from finding the people who get in debt, stay in debt, and always pay the minimum balance on time. Think about that. The credit card business model has long defined its best customers as those who never get out of debt and never default. They just pay and pay and pay. Now that's a deal, but only for the banks. And think about this. The credit card business expanded in the 2000s into the low-income subprime market. The new law requires subprime issuers tell their customers the real cost of borrowing. It's an effective interest rate of 80% or more. If you knew you were going to be charged an 80% rate, wouldn't you steer clear? In a strange but true experience, the credit card over the past three decades somehow became almost as much a symbol of the American dream as buying a car and a home. I say almost, because most of us are ambivalent about credit cards, valuing their convenience and dreading the bill. So, forget all the fancy words about the democratization of credit and freedom of consumer choice. If you use a credit card for convenience, fine. But if you carry a balance, stop. And then it won't matter what the credit card companies do.
Economics editor Chris Farrell. Your thoughts? Go to marketplace.org and click on Contact. You'll also find a detailed breakdown of all the new rules and regulations soon to govern our plastic. I've never actually run the numbers, but I'd guess at least half the questions you've sent in over the last year have been about credit cards. And these days, many of you are trying to figure out if there's a new normal.
You know, an informal poll of my coworkers, none of them were aware that interest is now being charged from the date of a transaction.
We'll tackle your plastic parables and offer some insight next on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. You have sent in hundreds of questions, not to mention horror stories, and believe it or not, even a few happy tales about your credit cards. So let's talk about them. MSN Money columnist Liz Pulliam-Weston is with us this week to offer some insights into your relationship with plastic. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Tess.
We know that the new credit card rules are taking effect this week. And Liz, it seems like this has been a long time coming.
Oh, I look back over my columns for MSN and I wrote one in February 2008 saying the credit card party is over, guys. Because already the defaults were going up and the credit crunch was happening and people were having their limits lowered and their interest rates raised. Well, Congress passed its credit card reform law that just accelerated things.
Well, early last year, we started getting so many phone calls and emails about credit card mayhem that we decided to step outside our offices to find a few of those complaints. And here's what we heard.
I missed one payment with a credit card. It just slipped my mind and my interest rate shot. It was good like 10% in a day.
Trying to avoid the 22%.
Raising it to 32% on late payments.
My Amex was unilaterally closed. My Bank of America card, the limit was cut in half.
The problem too is that you need credit to get credit. So if they're closing your credit cards, that in and of itself, I think, lowers your credit score.
I've never made a late payment. I never came close to abusing it or really even using it.
I was pretty loyal to the credit card company, and I should have been cut some slack, I think.
Yeah, that whole idea of loyalty, that's pretty much dead, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
On both sides?
Yes, it is. And, you know, the weird thing is it used to be if you carried a balance and paid on time, you were considered a great customer.
Right.
Now they don't want to take the risk because you've got that balance, you could default. So
you can't win.
No. You really can't.
There's no way to, it seems like there's no rhyme or reason for whether you are a good credit card customer or not.
Well, the way to do it is the way that we've always recommended, which is do not carry balances. That puts you at the risk of all kinds of weird behavior by your credit card issuer. That's always been true, but now people are seeing examples where even if they have good credit, they're seeing their rate go up or their limit go down or their account get closed.
All right. Well, let's talk to Gary from Cary, North Carolina. Hi, Gary from Cary.
Hi, Tess.
What do you think of these new credit card rules?
They're okay with me. I've never had any problem with the credit cards because I always pay off my balances every month.
Oh, my kind of guy, Gary. Well done.
Well, so why do you need us?
I'm a sucker for these airline credit cards that offer you 25,000 frequent flyer miles just for applying and using the card once. And I churn them. In the last 7 years, I've had 21.
Ooh. Holy cow. You know what this reminds me of, Liz?
What?
A certain movie that I saw recently.
I don't spend a nickel if I can help it, unless it somehow profits my mileage account.
So what are you saving up for, Hawaii? South of France?
It's not like that. The miles are the goal.
All right, Gary, have you ever been compared to George Clooney?
I am often mistaken for him.
Why don't we bring him in here?
Maybe we should. Well, it sounds like this is working for you, Gary. So what's the problem?
I'm wondering if I'm hurting my credit score. And I don't know the answer to that question because we haven't needed any credit for a long time. So I've never really checked my score.
So you literally get these cards and you don't even use them? You just get them for the miles and then dump them?
You have to use them once, typically.
Yeah.
And I typically will hang on to them for 5 or 6 months until the miles have been deposited in my account and I've actually used the miles. And then I cancel the account.
Okay, wow. So you've been canceling as you go along. You don't have 21 open cards at this point?
I have 3 open.
Okay. Well, generally, we don't recommend people apply for credit willy-nilly because that can hurt your scores. But the fact that you continue getting these offers and they're fairly rich offers tells me that your credit scores are probably quite good. What you're doing isn't the worst thing in the world. I just wouldn't do it if you are about to go get another mortgage, a car loan, something like that. Because then you really want to keep those points as high as possible.
So is it true that your credit score gets nicked a little bit each time someone runs a credit score on you?
Yes. If somebody's pulling your credit, that hurts your score. But you don't get hurt when you are the one initiating the pull. So if you are getting your credit report or you're getting your credit scores, it shouldn't hurt you as long as you're going through like MyFICO or one of the credit bureaus.
Now, Gary, I know that you are a professor of ethics.
I am indeed.
In the philosophy department there at North Carolina State. What would the Greeks say about this?
So you might think that this is really unfair, that people like me taking advantage of the system are right. Hurting the people we heard from earlier who aren't able to get into the system. And I think there's actually something to that. I mean, when I do this, sometimes I wonder about what I'm doing. Hmm. But only if we had a rational credit system.
Yeah.
Good point. And if I can put your mind a little bit at ease, the rewards that you're getting are generally paid for by the interchange fees that merchants have to pay. So you really haven't been doing this on the back of your fellow credit card users. You're doing it on the back of everyone else who pays, you know, who buys things because, you know, the prices are going to be a little bit inflated to cover that.
Well, I'm going to have to run to class now, but I know that there's a Visa card coming from United.
Oh, my goodness.
Enjoy those trips.
Wow. So where are you going with these trips?
Our son lives in Granada in Spain. We went there once. Our daughter lives in Portland, Oregon. We've been there once. And our other son lives in Boston. So if it's any consolation, we're putting the miles to good use.
You're not like George Clooney where you're just getting miles for miles' sake.
No. And my wife and I do have a lot of fun on these trips, but we're not members of the Mile High Club.
Oh, well, I wasn't even going to go there, but...
I know your listeners were anxious to know.
Well, we will let you go to class, and perhaps you could discuss the ethics of credit card usage as we get ready for all these big changes in Congress.
We're on it.
Thanks so much for the call.
Take care.
We'd love to know if we have any other frequent flyer freaks out there. Unfortunately, you do not earn miles for calling us to talk about your life with dollar signs, but give us a call. Our money line is 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY, or write us an email. You'll find the Getting Personal link at marketplace.org. And next we have Jenny in Roseburg, Oregon. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
I understand you have a story that involves the airlines as well, but this is not a good one. What happened?
So, yes, I was on my way to London we were between connecting flights with United Airways and rushing between gates, not quite sure where we were going, and we stopped at what looked like an information booth to ask directions, and this woman was super charming and show me the directions you have and I can show you the much quicker way to get to where you need to go and where are you on your way to, and oh, London, that's fantastic, you know, we can get you a free flight if you can sign up now for the Mileage Plus plan. We can add you know, today's special offer kind of thing, we'll add 30,000 miles, you might get another round trip to London. I can get the two of you, me and my companion, can get you both signed up for this in 10 minutes and I'll give you the quick way to the gate. I guarantee you'll make your flight. Don't worry about it. She was so delightful. The kind of person you'd really want at any dinner party. Charming and interested. And
I think they call those salespeople.
I haven't met such a good one in years, seriously. So she got to the bit about social security number and mother's maiden name. And, and I thought, well, you know, United have my passport number already.
You went ahead and signed up.
So I went ahead and said yes, and she finished the form, and she tore off a little cardboard card, and said, here's your temporary card. So when we got back, I went through my mail and found a credit card in the mail.
Uh-oh.
It had United Airlines on it, and there was nothing in anything she presented that implied that this was a financial transaction in any way.
So what'd you do?
So I then went through the fine print. I sat down and read it, and it's only on page 137 or something. It said something about the $130 fee. So I immediately, it was a Chase credit card. I immediately went to Chase and complained very loudly to the bank manager. He canceled the card and he canceled the fee.
Yeah. Liz, what do you make of this?
It could have been worse because Chase has three of these cards now with United, and one has like a $375 annual fee.
What?
It might be $325, but I know it's over $300 because it gets you into their airport lounge, which is normally even more expensive.
Is it legal to sign someone up for a credit card without telling them it's a credit card?
It seems like a deceptive practice to me. But I would say the minute anyone asks you for your Social Security number, you need to stop in your tracks and ask them, is this a credit transaction? Are you going to pull my credit? And this is everywhere. I mean, I would even do it at your doctor's office because you never know. Sometimes you could be signed up for some sort of payment plan without knowing it.
Something about that situation puts you in a very vulnerable position. The person is wearing a United uniform, they're behind the United gate, they're behind security. Everything says this is a trustworthy environment.
I'm glad you were able to get the situation resolved, and I do hope United takes a look at the way that it's promoting these cars, because it sounds like you really didn't know what you were signing up for.
All right, and Jenny, I do also want to ask you about this new credit card legislation, which unfortunately I don't think will address situations like this, but give me a sense on a scale of 1 to 10 how much difference you think these are going to make.
Unless they've addressed terms and conditions and making them such that an ordinary human being can read them and make sense of them, then I don't know what help that is.
Yeah, is that's supposed to be one thing that's happening, right?
Yeah, it should get clear. There's some things that are going to be a huge improvement. But again, if you have somebody at the front end who's being deceptive about what the card is and how much you're going to pay for it, getting those terms and conditions after your credit's been pulled, after you've already gotten the card, that doesn't help very much.
All right, Jenny, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
All right, Dave is on the phone in Bloomington, Minnesota. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
And I understand, congratulations, so in order for you. You're getting married, right?
That's right, yep. Just about 4 months ago here, getting tying the hitch, tying the knot.
Because you have called Marketplace Money, I do have to ask, how are you paying for this wedding?
We have set aside the money in an account, and we plan on charging everything just so we get our 1%, but we'll pay it off right away. So.
So you have a cashback card?
That's right, yep.
Is that a good idea, Liz?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Why spend all that money if you're not going to get anything back from it? You know, if you're not going to get miles for the honeymoon or cashback, crazy. And besides, the other thing great about a credit card is it's the middleman. If there's anything that goes wrong, like nothing ever goes wrong with weddings, okay?
Never.
But in case...
My flowers never arrive.
Oh, man. Just in case, it's nice to have that middleman to, you know, go beat up on the vendor for you if you need
yeah.
to.
Well, it's helping us get over the gross amount of money that we'll be spending in one evening. We know we'll get at least a little bit of money back.
What's the most surprising expense that you've found so far?
You know, the food can get a bit outrageous. And
it is, isn't it?
The, even worse is the bar tab. You never know what that could add up to if you got to do that open bar. So.
Oh, yeah.
Could get expensive pretty quick.
You know that's what weddings are for. That's why people come, right? Oh, no, I'm such a cynic.
People will have a good time.
Well, so you've got a new life coming together, maybe a fresh start for your wallet. How can we help?
Well, that's the deal. We're mixing our finances together, and we're just kind of realizing here that we have more credit cards than we need, and I'd like to get rid of one of mine. However, I have heard that it can hurt your credit. Even though I'm ending on good terms, it can hurt my credit to get rid of my credit card.
Boy, here we go again. We have answered this question more times than I can even remember. So, Liz, shall we say it together?
Yes!
it can hurt your credit, but how much?
Well, that's the thing. If you have very good credit scores, if you have lots of other available lines of credit, you can cancel a card now and then and just not sweat it. I would try to keep open your oldest card and your highest limit card because those are contributing a lot to your scores. Is it just for simplification or are you worried the card itself is hurting your credit somehow?
No, it's just for simplification. It's basically another bill we have to worry about making sure it gets paid each month, and we definitely don't need the credit, and we pay off all our credit cards every month. So.
Is there a fee on it?
There's no fee. In fact, the card I want to get rid of is one that does not have any kind of cash back or anything like that, so really no point for us to use it.
Another thing people worry about unnecessarily is the fact that having the card, or having a bunch of cards means they have too much available credit. Well, that's not even a negative factor in the FICO scoring formula.
It's not?
There's no such thing in FICO scoring formula as too much available credit. You know, you really can't have too many cards except for the situation he's talking about where it's just a pain to keep track of them all.
Right. Dave, do you mind if I ask you one more question, a political question?
Certainly.
So we've got these new credit card regulations coming into effect this week, and I wanted to know on a scale of 1 to 10, how much difference do you think these are going to make?
Pretty much 1, because they'll just change the way they do their rules. They'll find some way to get money out of us.
I actually think these were long overdue.
You think it does enough?
Oh, I don't think it does enough, no. But I think it's a start at least.
You think it's more than a 1?
I think it's more closer to a 6 or a 7. I think you can still get a good deal from a credit card company, but they need to have some restrictions put on them.
Yeah, and like Dave, perhaps you can actually take advantage of those credit card companies.
Exactly.
Well, congratulations on your pending nuptials. I hope the weather is beautiful and that you guys just have a fantastic day.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
We want to know what financial habits you are wedded to. Do give us a call on our money line. It's 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. Or send us an email. You'll find the Getting Personal link at marketplace.org. Oh, is my mic on? Sorry about that. Oops. All right. Well, next we have Karen in Newton, Massachusetts. I promise I won't sing anymore, Karen. I understand you're getting hurt by a card that you do use.
Yes. I've, had a Macy's card for some time, and I do use it periodically, and I generally don't carry a balance, but I did make some purchases at the end of December. And I noticed on my bill, mandatory interest charges. And then there was a little note on the bill that said to avoid initial interest charge, if you pay your new purchase balance in full by February 22nd, your initial interest charge will be refunded on your revolving account. So I guess my question is, what happened to the grace period?
All right. Well, let's back up for a second. Do you have a lot of these department store cards?
I have a few, yes.
So how many do you have?
Possibly 4 to 5 of them.
Oh, geez. So you're what we would call a shopper.
Right, I am. But, really, none of them have balances at the moment. And it's a convenience and it's a way to get an extra discount. So I do use them.
All right, well, let's get to this question of charging the interest before you even get the bill.
Well, it's the elimination of the grace period. And they can do that, obviously.
They can?
They have, yeah. But, and the way that they're doing it of refunding you back makes it seem like, oh, I'm not paying in any interest. But if you don't use that card again, then that credit's just going to languish. You know, this is not the way we're used to credit cards working.
I just want to add, if I can, that, you know, an informal poll of my coworkers, none of them were aware that interest is now being charged from the date of the transaction.
I think that would surprise a lot of people.
It would, and it's very rare. I mean, I won't say it's a standard practice in the industry at all. That's why you got caught with it. You just didn't expect that to happen.
But good for you for paying attention.
Absolutely.
And how much difference do you think these new credit card regulations are going to make?
I'm a little skeptical about them. I mean, when you see things like this, you wonder if the legislation really went far enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is going to make some protections that are very important. It is going to put those into place.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're still going to have to be very, very vigilant about our credit card bills and about the credit that we apply for.
Yep. All right. Thanks for the call, Karen.
You're welcome. Take care.
And Liz, thanks so much for walking us through the changing world of credit.
It's my pleasure, Tess.
Remember to always check with your financial professional before you make any big money decisions.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. By the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And by American Public Media, announcing Krista Tippett's new book, Einstein's God, Conversations About Science and the Human Spirit, available in bookstores February 23rd.
When kids watch parents use credit cards to get all kinds of stuff, it's nothing short of magic.
One swipe and you're transported like the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe to an exciting world of new stuff. Only it's the Visa, the Amex, and the MasterCard.
We'll hear a mother explain to daughter why the world of debt is not like Narnia. That's coming up on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. So we've spent a lot of time hearing how the new credit card legislation will affect you. But there's another big group out there that's experiencing major changes, the credit card issuers. Of course, as we know, they've been preparing for this for months and adjusting their policies accordingly. But we thought it was only fair to get their side of the story. So we called up Scott Talbot. He's with the Financial Services Roundtable. That's an organization that represents the banking industry. And he frankly surprised me with his answer to this question. What do you think of the new laws?
For the most part, we are entirely supportive of the reforms in this law. Our biggest concern with this bill, or the effect of this bill, would be that it would have a downward pressure on the availability of credit, either through reducing credit lines or increasing interest rates. But overall, if you look at the provisions in the bill, from increased disclosures to predictability on your payment date to prohibiting marketing to students, this is actually a net benefit to consumers. In the end, everybody benefits from that.
Well, let's go back to something you just said a moment ago. One of the things that we have been hearing is this argument that this law is going to make it more difficult for people to get credit. Can you walk us through exactly how that will happen? How will credit be more difficult to either maintain or obtain?
Sure. Credit card lending is the riskiest type of lending. There's no collateral. It can be fully discharged in bankruptcy. Terms for the credit are based on that risk. And so anytime the government steps in and places controls over the ability of the market to price for that risk, the markets will respond by decreasing the availability of credit or increasing the interest rate, which has the net effect of decreasing the availability of credit.
But as far as I can see in the law, there's nothing that says you can't raise the interest rate. You just have to give someone, you know, a month and a half notice.
Well, no, the law actually prohibits you from increasing the interest rate on an existing balance, except for some very, very narrowly defined circumstances.
Right. But any balance going forward, you certainly can.
Correct, for purchases going forward. But what we're focused on here, and this is where our concern comes in, if you have a $5,000 or $10,000 balance at 10% interest rate and you start missing payments, the law prohibits the industry from increasing the interest rate on that balance.
But what possible good would that do for the industry? I mean, if you're increasing someone's interest rate and they're already in arrears, how can that possibly mean that you're going to get more money out of that stone?
Well, what we're doing is the market is adjusting for the risk of that particular borrower. If the interest rate goes up, yes, it makes it harder for the consumer to pay that balance down. But at the same time, they're still going to keep paying. They're still going to try, or at least we hope so. I mean, that's the contract that they've signed. And so if the interest rate reflects their increased risk, then their payments will respond accordingly, and they'll end up paying more ultimately in interest. So in the end, it's not a good thing for the consumer necessarily, but by having the ability to price for risk, you allow the credit card market to operate efficiently.
I guess I still don't understand, and I've never understood this as this whole debate has gone along. You know, this notion that you increase by sometimes enormous amounts the interest rate on an existing balance as someone is falling behind on payments, that just makes it harder for them to pay it back. So how on earth does that benefit the credit card company?
Well, there are those who will still be able to afford to make the payments, but you're absolutely correct. It becomes a downward spiral, and mm-hmm. we recognize that. And that is one of the challenges of credit card lending.
What do you say to the, at the very least, hundreds if not thousands of people out there who have watched their credit card lines drop, their interest rates increase, and yet they say, look, I didn't do anything wrong over the last 9 months. Why punish me when I've been a good credit risk? What's the answer to that?
Sure. A couple things. One, we are living in a recession, and there is a generalized risk in the economy. Woven into everybody's credit card rate is that generalized risk. Secondly, when you get an interest rate increase, you have the ability to challenge and refuse to pay that interest rate increase. And you will see that in the law that goes effective on Monday. So if you get an interest rate increase or a credit line decrease, contact your lender and see if you can negotiate a better rate or better terms. And if they are unwilling to negotiate, then vote with your feet. Go online and do your research. There are about 6,000 different credit card issuers out there.
And finally, Scott, you know, it seems like the credit card industry has kind of become the boogeyman, the new societal pariah, if you will. What's it like to be the new folks that people love to hate?
Well, a couple things. Well, we're not used to being in the news, that is for sure. But that being said, there are some reforms that need to occur, and the industry is embracing them and will be ready on Monday to be compliant with the new law. And what we want to do is eliminate those bad practices and strengthen the good ones so that credit cards are no longer the boogeyman, but rather their effective tool in your pocket, and people feel comfortable using them and people feel comfortable carrying them.
Scott Talbot is with the Financial Services Roundtable, and we've been talking about the new credit card laws going into effect this coming Monday. Thanks so much for your time.
Sure, my pleasure.
There's more on our website. Check it out. It's marketplace.org. All parents want their kids to learn the value of a hard-earned dollar. But today, debit cards and credit cards are the main ways that we buy. And how do you teach the value of a hard-earned rectangle of plastic? Personal finance writer Beth Kobliner knows all too well how much trouble young people can get into with credit cards. She's literally written books about it. But beyond that, she has a teenage daughter, Becca. Becca lives in a world where a single swipe gets her friends whatever they want. So we asked them to tell us how they find a middle ground between mom's old school rules and today's teen pressures. We'll start with Beth.
Last spring, I spent a couple of weeks on a book tour visiting college campuses, talking to students and recent grads about the abysmal financial mess they were about to enter. Now, I know the statistics. It's my job, after all. So I'm aware that the average college senior leaves school with more than $4,000 in credit card debt. And of course, many have much more than that. But seeing it on the front lines like that was a harsh reality check, a new toxic twist on what it means to be a grown-up.
When we were little, my brother Adam and I imagined our grown-up futures with credit cards. One swipe and you're transported like the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe to an exciting world of new stuff. Only it's the Visa, the Amex, and the MasterCard. The idea of having a credit card still symbolizes, for so many teens, a sense of maturity and responsibility.
Back in the late 80s, when I graduated from college, no one thought you could just swipe your way to the good life with credit. It wasn't until I had a job and earned money that I even thought about getting a card. It allowed me to buy big, unsexy items without lugging around a lot of cash in my purse. So I'd use it to purchase a desk lamp or a toaster oven for my kitchen. I paid the bill in full, a few days after I got it in the mail. I honestly never thought about only paying the minimums and carrying a balance from month to month. Neither did most of my friends.
I've been with friends in the mall in New Jersey who got to use their parents' credit cards. Their parents will tell them they have a spending limit, but it's not like kids ever stand around in the store adding up all their purchases with a pencil and paper. What happens is they'll say something like, "My mom gave me this card for emergencies, but this is kind of an emergency. I really want this and it's on sale now."
I tend to quiz my daughter's friends about their financial lives with the same intensity that some parents use to glean details about the social lives of their kids' friends. My favorite was the girl from 7th grade who memorized her mom's credit card number and used it to rack up over $100 in charges on iTunes. When her mother later found out about the spending, she was not pleased. But the girl, a top honor student, tells the story with a chuckle, which makes me worried that it's a little bit like a kid sneaking a beer. It may make people laugh at first, but when you think about it, it's not funny.
I'll be in 9th grade next year, and as far as I know, credit cards aren't on the curriculum. I mean, if you can take advanced physics and biochemistry in high school, then there has to be some way to make sure kids can learn how interest works. Like, if you buy a sweater on credit but pay just the minimum, you could wind up spending twice as much for that sweater in the long run. I hear my mother say that line all the time, which has its own drawbacks, but what about the other kids who don't have a clue?
I'm happy college is still 4 years away, and even happier that because of the Card Act, Becca won't be able to get a credit card without getting my husband's and my permission once she leaves home. Call it my financial separation anxiety, my fear of severing the fiscal umbilical cord that once bound us. At least with the new rules, she won't be seduced into signing up for a card simply because they gave her a Frisbee or a T-shirt.
I would never sign up for anything for a free Frisbee, Mom. You know that. And though I know I'm not going to get a credit card for many years, there is something I would like.
Yes?
Can I get a Facebook account?
Mm-mm.
Oh, come on, Mom.
Nope.
Figured it was worth a try.
It's always worth a try, Becca. Time for a break from all this serious credit card business. Here are our friends from Portland's sketch comedy troupe Livewire with their imagined take on a phone call that could happen starting Monday.
Infinity Premier Credit, customer service. What can I do for you today?
Hi, yeah, I have some issues with my credit card statement.
Okay, what's your name?
Linda Olcott, O-L-C-O-T-T.
O-T-T. All right there, Linda. I have your account right here in front of me. What is the problem?
Well, first of all, it looks like you increased my interest rate from 12 to 23%.
Yeah, we went ahead and did that. What is your problem?
I was under the impression that because of new regulations, you had to send me notice 45 days in advance of any rate or fee increase.
Yeah, we did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, we did. I see right here a carrier pigeon was sent out over 3 months ago.
Excuse me, did you say carrier pigeon?
Yes, ma'am. Mookie, the carrier pigeon, was sent to your residence with notification that we were doubling your rates.
I never got a carrier pigeon.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, that's too bad. I guess he never made it. Boy, I sure love that little Mookie.
Well, I don't think that it's very fair that
okay, what about the telegraph, ma'am?
What telegraph?
Are you telling me that you did not receive the telegraph that we sent?
No! I don't have a telegraph machine.
Well, I really would have to insist that is your problem there, ma'am.
My problem? That technology is over 100 years old. Come on, this is absurd.
Ma'am, please calm down. I won't have you disrespecting the telegraph or the good name of Mr. Samuel Morse.
Why didn't you just call me or send me a letter in the mail? The real mail.
Well, ma'am, if we had sent you a letter, would you have read it?
Of course!
Well, there you go. So, can I help you with anything else today?
Oh, fine. I'm not sure if you can help with this one, but my son's in college and he just signed up for one of your credit cards.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
Yeah, well, you gave him a $20,000 credit limit, and I'm not sure if at 18 he's really ready to handle that kind of responsibility. Plus, aren't you prohibited from signing up students within 1,000 yards of campus?
Yes, that is true. However, thanks to the small print, we can designate any college we want. So, we went ahead and chose to be 1,000 yards away from Oxford University.
Oxford? You mean in England?
Yep, we're way more than 1,000 yards away from that campus. You can even go ahead and check it if you'd like. I'll wait.
Wow. Okay, well, how about this one? My statement was supposed to include information on how long it would take me to pay off my balance if I'm only making minimum payments. Where's that?
Yeah, it should be right there on the top.
It says, when the moon and Jupiter align and all the children of the world unite in song atop the mountains of harmony?
Exactly, ma'am. I'm really not sure how much more specific we can be on that one.
Okay, you know what? I would like to cancel my credit card with this company.
All right, ma'am, fair enough. That's your option if you choose to do so. All I need from you is your full cancellation request in the form of airplane skywriting above any one of our branch offices.
You can't be serious.
Just make sure it's a clear day so we'll be able to see it.
Livewire Focus for Faces for Radio is a sketch comedy troupe in Portland, Oregon.
Marketplace Money is supported by LendingTree.com, offering the new loan coach, giving personalized financial advice for every step of the lending process. Just one of the many tools at the all-new LendingTree.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. Finally, we've explored what the credit card reforms will do, what they won't, what consumers think about them, what bankers think about them. But there's still one big question mark out there. Will these changes have any long-term effect on our behavior as consumers? It's hard to answer that without a crystal ball in front of me, but maybe we can learn about the future by looking backwards. John Steele Gordon is an author specializing in the history of Wall Street, and he joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Now, your specialty is financial history. So I wonder, looking back, is there any evidence that shows that reforms like this actually have a lasting effect on people's behavior?
Oh, I think so. I mean, not so much in finance, perhaps, although the reforms of the early 1930s made the American economy very prosperous once the Depression was over.
Sure.
For an awfully long time. I mean, we'd had crashes about every 20 years. Well, the next crash after 1929 was 1987.
Mm-hmm.
In other ways, for instance, in New York City and many other cities now, restaurants have to post the calories that each dish has, and they've found that it causes people to order fewer calories. It's actually changed their behavior. So I think it's a good idea to have it where they, every month when you get the bill, it tells you how long it'll be for you to pay off this debt if you only pay the minimum.
Because you don't generally bother to do that math.
No, of course not. Yeah, when it's laid out in front of you.
Yeah.
Because until then, it's very easy. You know, you go into the store and you see this neat new gadget, and, you know, it's so easy to just take out your plastic card and hand it over. And, you know, you don't really think through how much that's going to end up costing you per month or whatever. And now this it'll tell you. And hopefully people will get a little more self-discipline.
Less likely to overindulge in your credit, just like overindulging on food.
Right. You'll buy fewer Big Macs.
Right. Now, you have said that while there was a lot of blame to spread around for the financial crisis, a big part of that blame goes to traders and bankers who forgot that, yields are not guaranteed, risk is not eliminated. But I wonder, what about consumers? What kinds of things did we forget about money management over the last couple of decades at least?
Well, I think one thing is that we were very prosperous for so long that people began to think, as they do when the top of the business cycle, that the sky is blue and everything is going to be going up forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they forget that, you know, there will at some point be another rainy day.
We have, I think, learned a lot of lessons out of this. People are already changing their behavior. You know, I think folks are saving more for that rainy day, having a nest egg, you know, this notion that you can't spend more than you earn. I wonder, do those lessons last right now because we are in still at least the very end of a recession and certainly in somewhat of a down market? If things get better, are we going to forget all that?
The individuals who were severely burned by this, they'll never forget it. But those that somehow escaped this time may forget it in order to be burned next time.
So when we look at the past and lessons from the past, what can we tell from history about whether this legislation will work and will prompt us to change our habits? Or is human nature just too strong to overcome?
We get better every time. We learn from our mistakes. I mean, that's a very human trait. No ship has hit an iceberg in the North Atlantic since the Titanic. Disasters repeat, but never the same disaster. We find new ways to screw things up.
And it sounds like you're fairly confident that that's going to happen again.
As long as humans are humans, it will.
John Steele Gordon has been with us. We've been talking about the credit card legislation. Thanks so much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
And that's Marketplace Money for this week. Next time, a look inside the ghost town of 2010 condo developments.
I was having a fear of waking up one morning and I'd be the only one in the building. This just scared me.
Marketplace Money is produced by Deborah Clark with Stephen Hoffman and Eve Trobe. Our technical director is Josh Rogerson. Our theme was composed by Mark Governor. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Special thanks this week to our friends here at KAZU on the campus of California State University at Monterey Bay. I'm Tess Vigeland. We'll see you next week.
There's a lot packed into an hour of Marketplace Money. Check it out again on our website at marketplace.org. Or take the show with you. Download the show by clicking on the subscribe to podcast link and never miss an episode again. Marketplace Money is supported by Putnam Investments, working to solve America's retirement savings challenge through innovation, service, and performance. Putnam, a world of investing.
American Public Media.